Making Impact series, where we talk to life science thought leaders about their work and initiatives. And we will explore ideas and technologies that are making impact in their communities, locally and globally. Welcome. I am your host today. My name is Helen Konozopoulos. I am the co-founder of Odea.ai. And I'm also an adjunct professor at the University of Toronto at the Department of Computer Science. So I would like to welcome Amel Deshpande from Mars here in Toronto. Hi, Amel.
Good morning, Helen. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. I always love to hang out with you and talk to you about what you're working on. So Mars, it's a major part of the Toronto ecosystem and also the global ecosystem. And it's working on tons and tons of projects and tons of initiatives. And I was just wondering, what brought you to Mars and what's your origin story?
Yeah, so it's before Mars, it was a 2.5 decade journey as an academic clinician here in Toronto on University Avenue, where all the hospitals are located. And I've been in and out of the venture ecosystem for you know, probably the better part of a decade, but really in earnest for probably 18 to 24 months. And what I really started to sense was a change in the way health innovation is looked at by clinicians in general, by investors, and just the technology that's coming out of that ecosystem and the ability to access technology in general, whether it's biotech, digital health, whether it's medical devices, and there's a real buzz. And I wanted to be part of that. And so probably 3 months ago, an opportunity opened up to be part of Mars and to, you know, jump in with 2 feet, as it were, and help some of those ventures and founders to do the heavy lift to sort of make the healthcare system a better environment. And here I am. So a long journey, but that's probably it in a minute and a half or so.
Okay, let me step back. The clinician part, what were you focusing on it again?
So I was started out as another long journey, family medicine, cardiac assist surgeon, working at WSIB, a whole bunch of things. But for the last 2 decades, always an academic clinician in chronic pain management, non-interventional. So really helping people with, you know, chronic back pain, headaches, abdominal pain, generally lasting more than, you know, not the official definition, but our patients generally had pain for more than 7 years on average. And so helping them to better manage their life with chronic pain. So that's really what I focused on for about 2 decades, and then doing research in and around that area as well. Particularly my focus was, maybe no surprise to people viewing this, is on cannabis and pain.
Oh, that's like really interesting that you're... So do you think the work you were doing as a clinician or that background, that 20 years of having that, is going to bring... it is going to bring a lot of insights. It's going to bring a lot of understanding of challenges. How do you think you're going to be helping a lot of the teams you're going to be working with at Mars?
That's a great question, Helen. I think the healthcare system, I can only speak for Canada, but I assume it's like this in most jurisdictions, is a very complex system. There's a lot of moving parts. And I think from the outside, that's not always evident to entrepreneurs and ventures as they try and bring their technologies through the system. And it's really important to understand not only where it enters, but how it actually gets used. How does it benefit clinicians? Making sure it fits within the workflow. Because I think there's this often sense that just because it's a new shiny technology and it works, quote unquote, better than today, that it can just be thrown into the system and it'll all automatically be adopted and it works and you know, you go from there. And unfortunately, you know, that's as far from the truth as you can get, because often, when you put it into the ecosystem, if you don't do it appropriately, what you end up doing is just wasting a lot of time, energy, and creating incredibly frustrated clinicians who don't want to use that technology anymore.
So, do you have any use cases? Do you have any use cases that, like, of a success that you've had, that you've seen, and maybe you want to start with what didn't work, and then go into success, go from the bad to a good story.
Yeah. So, let me start with the bad stories, because I think there's so many around. Unfortunately, it's easier to pick on them, but I'll pick on one that obviously is probably obvious to most that are familiar with the healthcare system. And that's this whole electronic medical record concept, right? You know, if people were around long enough, let's just say go back two decades when electronic medical records in sort of the late 90s and early 2000s were supposed to revolutionize medicine, to grab data, to, you know, avoid duplication of data from one site to another, to help us understand problems earlier, all these kind of good upsides. And the reality is, until probably about 5 years ago, I mean, 15 years was a slog in terms of electronic medical records. And there are many physicians, for very good reasons, and clinicians in general, not just physicians, who just abhor electronic medical records. Why? Because it doesn't fit within the current workflow of how people do things, right? Maybe now it does, but it took an entire generation, right, for that to happen. So I wouldn't say that was because the technology was fantastic. I would say because there was a generational shift that just got used to doing, you know, entering things digitally. And so to me, that's kind of a good example of, if you don't understand what the workflow is and you just build a tool and throw it into the system, it takes a long time for that to sort of permeate through the ecosystem before you get the benefits. I think, you know, for on the opposite side, I think there are different technologies that work. I would say probably the best example, and it's probably a bad one, but I'll give it anyway, is if you look at biotechnology. I think it starts at a very different premise, right? Biotechnology often starts at the end first. It looks at generally an unmet need. It looks at something that needs intense solving, that there's a usual, forgive the pun for what I do, a huge pain point. And it works backwards to figure out, if you do this right, what's the technology that's going to solve this pain point? So it remains somewhat technology agnostic rather than focusing on that shiny tool. And you know, it's a different slog, but the concept is right, is let's actually really understand what the problem is and then go back and then figure out what a solution is to solve that problem. And I think with things like digital health, while there are certainly great examples, I think the challenge often is to build it and then we'll kind of figure it out later, right? Like there's so many problems in the healthcare, how could this not work? And so let's build the tool first and then let's point it to the problem. Unfortunately, if you don't understand the problem in a very nuanced way, you'll usually realize, unfortunately, a bit late, that what you've built doesn't really match what's needed. So
I think it's, you know, that I was just reading here, like, you know, startups fall into that trap a lot, and especially a lot of academic ones, right? It's, you know, a lot of research and coming up with novel technologies, which are really good to have. Like, it's that's a step of exploration. But when we have a lot of startups are like, you know, just going to plug in that technology into something without that pain point and without that kind of, I would say, reverse engineering, design thinking, let's look through a workflow, let's look through a patient journey, a customer journey, and say, how are we going to improve this process? Do you feel like a lot of your work is going to be, you know, let's discover lots of pain and let's figure out how to fix that journey through the pain?
So I mean, in my position right now, just to, you know, I'm probably one removed direct. So I have different hats on, but I'm one removed from working directly with the ventures at Mars. It sort of sits within another group. My role is to hook them to the wider ecosystem. So it's when they think they have that solution, when they're looking for extra fuel, which is sort of capital to fund that journey, that's usually when I interact with them. I think what my healthcare background really brings to the table, though, is a bit more nuanced understanding of how well that's going to be received by the ecosystem. Because you know, when I say the ecosystem, whether it's venture capital, whether it's customers, they're very focused on how, not the shiny new technology, but how is it going to solve that problem? And so it's in that interface that I would say I get to work with those companies. And that's, I think, where the sort of the healthcare background comes. And I think understanding the complexities, not only just the pain points, but, you know, as a clinician, I can say this, is there's somewhat perverse incentives sometimes in the healthcare system. And that could be a whole other show, so I'm not going to get into it. But I think the idea is you need to be aware of what those are before actually launching tool, because if not, then you could be building the right tool, but it's just not incentivized correctly, right? And that is something I think that's a bit different in the healthcare system than maybe other systems. And so I think that's often what brings some of the frustrations for great founders and ventures. It's like the technology works. It should, yeah, but you know what? You're not looking at the whole equation. And there's a huge incumbent force that's pushing back against it because it's not going to give way because it means negative things for them.
And there's also multiple stakeholders. And I think your knowledge in that in that complexity of what they need, their decision processing, what are their blockers and their own positions? It might not be they're trying to block this innovation. It's more like, how do I fit this in? And it's also, how do I even make a decision? And it's also having different conversations for them to get to that understanding. I think that's one of the issues of like, there's a reality that there's multiple people in this, and it's not just selling to one group, but it's multiple people.
Yeah, no, that's such a great point, Helen. I mean, the one thing I often hear, and I think it's maybe a little bit less now, but is ventures or founders are always saying, and this is ultimately true, but it's not a straight line, but it's for the patient. It helps the patient, right? So everyone's got to adopt it. But the patient doesn't live in a silo, right? I mean, the patient connects with caregivers, they connect with nurses, they connect with physiotherapists, physicians, all the way through that ecosystem, it's a journey. So because it helps one person in the journey, it may not help all the others. And so while it may be a great solution in that respect, I think it's important to look at that entire journey. Who and where are all those touch points? And how is your technology going to affect each one of those? Because any one of those touch points can block the entire pathway, so it doesn't actually get to the patient at the end of the day. Even though if you were just to hand it to the patient, it would make sense. That's not the way the healthcare system is built, right? For most things, unless we're talking sort of obvious wellness or sort of B2C kind of technologies that do just go to the consumer. But if you're pointing it within the healthcare system, you really need to understand what that journey is that technology needs to go through, and who are all the people that are going to touch it, and how is it going to make their lives better? Or in some cases, it makes it worse, even though the ultimate outcome may be better. If it makes, five people's lives worse in the interim, you may not get the chance to kind of get to that last stage where you're looking at. So that's often, it's an early founder issue that sometimes gets neglected. And I think it's often frustrating for them to do that after spending a lot of time and energy building this wonderful, wonderful tool.
Oh, I know. I mean, I think I've worked with so many startup founders, and I think this is one of the most challenging industries. Yeah. And when I have startups asking, like, I'm thinking of going into education or I'm going into health, I'm like, oh, really? Really? This is what you want to do? You don't want fintech, or is there something else you can choose from? This is the world, though. We need solutions. We need to make our lives better. We need better patient journeys, caregiver journeys, doctor journeys, nurse journeys, administration. There are multiple journeys in this ecosystem that need that support. So if we can if we can drive the innovation here in Toronto, in Ontario and in Canada, I'm a little bit biased because I'm here, but I mean, I've seen some amazing work across Canada. And so you're getting those blockers out of the way. Do you think those are the initiatives you want to work on? Are those the initiatives you're like thinking of implementing?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think I don't know if I'm going to be the one who sort of specifically moves those blockers. They're hard. It's a system issue. Yeah. I think getting entrepreneurs and ventures to sort of understand those blockers in a very nuanced way is important. And so they can figure out ways, above them, around them, through them, whatever way they want to go, but they need to be aware of it. I think that's one. I think I'm going to, if I could, Helen, is maybe backtrack a little bit to sort of what you got into. Is I think my focus, having been in the healthcare system for 2.5 decades, and particularly in Canada, I think what my focus really will be is trying to break down some of the silos between regionalism. It depends on I guess your audience, but if you're in Canada, you're certainly well versed with this sort of Vancouver versus Montreal, Montreal versus Toronto, Toronto versus Vancouver. There's this crazy regionalism, and we're often known for creating multiple pilot studies in every jurisdiction. And after the pilot study is done, there's silence, there's crickets, because nothing happens, because there's no follow on, because no one has the mass or the density in this country to really maintain that on an ongoing basis, right? So it's, you know, we want the made here kind of solution. And I think that's really to the detriment of a lot of the entrepreneurs and ventures in Canada. I think there's some technology that needs to be put on the global stage, and we need to, you know, start playing as a global player. And unfortunately, and again, this is good and bad, but I think the unfortunate part is we don't have the density to be a specific Boston if you're looking at biotech, or San Francisco if you're sort of, you know, digital or biotech. We're just not of that size. I think, but that can be turned into a positive where it says, why do we need to, you know, why does Toronto need to be a Boston? Why does Vancouver need to be a San Francisco? Why don't we figure out how to play together and start to create sort of these regional centers of excellence so that Vancouver does what it does amazingly well, and Toronto can still do that, and Montreal can still do that, and we can start to share resources. I mean, like, you know, you and I are not in the same room, for God's sake, yet we're sharing a lot of this communication. Why don't we start to use that in the innovation ecosystem? So to me, I mean, you know, again, 80%, if not 90% of my meetings are done on Zoom. It's not difficult to start to bring the talent that is in UBC to ventures, even if they're physically in Toronto, to start transferring that knowledge. Because if you think about it, that's really what fosters these ventures, right? Is the knowledge, the mentors, the people who've done it before, the people who kind of know where the pitfalls are, which is what we're talking about. So to me, I think we need to sort of change the game a little bit and stop competing with one another and sort of figure out. And that's a heavy lift. It's not going to happen tomorrow. But I think we need to start and sort of focus on that and sort of say, great, how can Canada play on the global stage in anything health innovation? Because, you know, just looking at some recent work here, I mean, this is an idea in Ontario, to your point. We have 24 universities in Ontario. 15 of them, 15 out of 24 have a specific biotechnology program, right? It doesn't mean they're all going to have cutting edge research, but they've got dedicated programs to really upskilling the individuals who go through that and producing talent. 14 of them are within a 4-hour drive of Mars. And yet we focus on one or two.
Yeah.
But think about it. We focus on one or two, but we have 14. And one of the biggest issues in biotech is access to talent and skills. Why aren't we plugging in as a region to all of these rather than just sort of serendipitously waiting for it to happen, right? And so to me, it's really not about the, but it's how do we connect those resources? Again, we go back to, as you said quite correctly, there are challenges because everyone's got a different perspective. They've got a different stake in the fire. Navigating that is really challenging. But I think the one thing I will tell you, being from Mars, I've managed to talk to a lot of individuals from BC to Nova Scotia. And the one thing that I am phenomenally excited to hear is they all want to collaborate.
Yeah.
They're like, let's figure this out because we realize we can't do it over here by ourselves. BC says the same thing. They're trying to figure it out. And I think that's the first start of changing from this regionalism concept to more national strategy that says, okay, again, it's a process, but at least it starts with people wanting to get there. And I think that's exciting for me.
That is really exciting. And I think it's an opportunity now because we've shifted our perspectives about how we work and how we can communicate and how we can collaborate. Like massive Canadian conferences can now be online, you know? So it's like, we can have these conversations. Also the conversation about like, or the comment you had about, you know, talent that like, you know, having taught, and I still teach, you know, and this, the biggest thing that brings me in are the students and their perspectives and their wants and their needs to, they want the opportunities. They want to know how to share and get out there and start innovating themselves and stay in biotech, you know, and work in health and work in all parts of life sciences. Right. And we hire from multiple universities and a lot of great backgrounds. And I think that talent, that is a big silo that I think could just be broken down quite quickly because the audience is ready just to work. Like it doesn't have the same kind of blockers that others would have. So.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I think, you know, again, we're doing some work internally in Mars and sort of understanding the ecosystem. So, and I'm using biotech because that's where a lot of our work has been. So I'm not saying that's the only thing in healthcare, because it's not. But what's fascinating is if you actually do a deep dive, Canada produces some phenomenal talent on this side of the border. What Canada has a much greater challenge in is retaining that talent, right? We don't have the ecosystem for them to stay because, again, this comes back to the density of it is not there. So if you're starting out with a venture, and I know, Helen, you're part of one and you've sort of raised some seed funding, I guess the challenge is when you go to hire sort of those, let's call them sort of A players, where you need to scale and you need to get, you know, senior management who's done this before, who can sort of develop those great product roadmaps, move to market. It's always a challenge for them on their side, because if that company doesn't work out, where do they go to next? Mm-hmm. Right? So you need the densities to start attracting those people. So we get them here, but the really good ones, we struggle to retain. And I think that's where, again, we need to figure out a better way of saying we're going to have this tiny, tiny ecosystem. And I'm hoping you come and you stay. Because if they're really talented, you're going to go to where you're needed and where you can create the most value. That's how those people think, right? So I think that's where we can do a much better lift in terms of really creating a lot of ventures, a lot of buzz, making a lot easier. And we realize all those ventures aren't going to be successful. That's just the nature of the game. But I think having a turnstile, if you will, that we can create mass, that if one goes, it's okay. We learn something from those innovations that fail. It's not like we don't learn anything. We should be learning something. And the great thing is, if you have another venture, you can transfer that knowledge, right, from those people to that next. But if you don't, then it dies. And so we need to stop that sort of dead end kind of routes where it goes to die, right? So we need, but that requires density and that requires time. So I think I love the talent. I love the 14, but I guess what I worry about is where do they go and how do we keep them here, right? And yeah. And how do we then leverage their learnings into the next venture and the next innovation? And then, because there is huge talent there. We just need to do a better job of keep holding on to it better.
I think the ecosystem, at least in very software oriented, yep, you know, like having, there's a lot of opportunities now in Toronto, yep, at least, yep, right? So yep. I think it's when you expand into more like into biotech and into life sciences, that's kind of like also where you're thinking, it's like we need to grow that support system, you know, and those types of initiatives that are happening that can keep them here a little bit more to grow those startups up. My question to you, and one of is you're working in Mars. What are some of the initiatives you want to tell our audience about? Anything that you're working on that you're like, I really need to share this right now, or at least give us a little bit of a glimpse into it.
Yeah. So I think as I build out the roadmap for the health sciences platform, I'm really focused on collaboration. So that's the first and foremost. How do we bring resources to different jurisdictions that need it? I mean, we are in Toronto. Obviously, it's a financial hub for Canada. We have UFT, which is a phenomenally large and amazing university in multiple domains. How do we bring some of that talent to areas that sort of may need access to that mentoring? I think that's one big thing. That's number one. Two is I would like to, you know, despite my ramblings around biotech, I think I want to make sure that people understand the importance of digital health. They understand the importance of AI. They understand the importance of medical devices. I mean, being part of the clinical world, I think all of those technologies are critically important at different points. So I don't think it's one versus the other. And I think, you know, we have to do a great job at all of them. So, I think people get wrapped up, and obviously 2 years into COVID, it's not difficult to do that. I just think the world is all about biotech. And I do think the next decade is going to be phenomenally interesting. But the reality is there are other technologies that we can't forget. I think you've mentioned a fantastic one. I think Canada, whether it's Montreal, whether it's Toronto, whether it's Waterloo, AI is like, it's phenomenal, right? I mean, we have done a fantastic job on AI, and we will, I assume, continue to do that as I see the number of ventures coming out of each of those jurisdictions, whether it be health, whether it be, you know, clean tech, whether it be any other of those domains. So I think that's an area that we should keep looking at. And I particularly am excited how AI starts to pervade healthcare, and it has in many ways. I mean, obviously, you know, you're running a venture as one example, but I think there's lots of other areas, both on the patient-facing side, whether it's on the research side, whether it's on the enterprise side. There are so many areas where it can make healthcare a lot more efficient, and I really look forward to sort of how that's going to evolve over time. And then I think medical devices, I mean, you know, it depends on how you want to draw your circle around what medical devices mean, but whether it's invasive devices, non-invasive devices, I mean, I think it's still early in the game. We'll see how it pans out. But I think this whole idea of sort of wearables, attaching it to AI, being able to collect new metrics. I mean, heart rate variability, everyone talks about it now. We weren't even, and we still don't, by the way, collect it in most clinical situations. So to me, that's like phenomenal. You're taking a metric that we hardly even use, and now getting way more insight than we could ever do as clinicians. You wrap that around some sort of innovative technology, machine learning, to understand what's it actually telling you, and you can start to change behavioral, you know, health in a significant way for some patients, right? So stuff like that coming down the pipeline is phenomenally exciting. So I think, again, I go back to the technologies that are going to drive the next wave are fantastic. We just got to make sure that we manage the obstacles that are potentially in the way to make sure that we get an innovative adoption and rapid adoption of those technologies, right? And they just don't die on the vine, because I think that's always the challenge.
Yeah, that is the biggest challenge. And I think, you know, bringing these emerging technologies and, you know, and our development of machine learning, AI, natural language processing, like all the types of technologies that we're using that are being used out of the hospital and the patient world, or kind of at a consumer level, and saying we are doing that there.
Yeah.
So why can't we bring it more in? My last question, and I think you kind of did have a few, you kind of brought it up a little bit in when you're speaking in your passion around building the ecosystem, but what is your ultimate vision for the ecosystem? So 5-10 years from now, where are you seeing your ecosystem be at?
That's a great question. I'll give you my hope, because who knows whether it's going to be there or not.
Hope is
right?
good.
Yeah, we all live in hope, right? What I would like to see, at least on the innovation side, is I would really like to see national strategies created around healthcare innovation and the different domains, so that, you know, we're not fragmenting resources right now. And I think that's a huge challenge we have in almost all jurisdictions, which is, to a certain degree, organizations go in with a zero-sum mindset. And I think that's terribly unfortunate, and it really doesn't promote innovation, right? We have to focus on not how we split that pie up into smaller and ever smaller pieces, which keeps people out. Obviously, the people who get the big pie are not too crazy about sharing that pie, but it's how do we make and grow a bigger pie? So to me, it's a lot about efficiency. It's, as I said before, how do we collaborate? But to me, the big vision was, yes, if we had a pan-Canadian strategy around healthcare innovation, number one. And people are doing this now, the next one I'm going to talk about, but it's around adoption. And there are some great organizations doing stuff on procurement, for example. Canada has, you know, always had a challenge with how we procure technologies at the organizational level. So there are other organizations working on streamlining that process. So making that sort of runway, if you will, for ventures to onboard their technology, for customers to try that technology, to evaluate them. I think that's important. And if we look at the clinical trial space, it's really still fairly complicated to get clinical trials done. Again, national strategies need to sort of address those issues. How do we make it easier? So to me, though, it all starts with not, and again, it's not going to be perfect, but not having 10 or 13 regional ecosystems all doing their own thing. Again, it's not going to happen right across the board. But if we have an overlying understanding around at least the innovation piece, it doesn't mean you have to, you know, not everyone has to adopt technology A, or it's not like everyone has to adopt technology B, because populations are different. Jurisdictions have different needs in terms of healthcare, right? I mean, in one area, it may be sort of addiction, and the other, maybe it'll be. So we're not saying that. But we're saying, in order to onboard technology, to validate it, to prove it, there needs to be a national kind of strategy to say, okay, here's how, you know, we're going to pave the path for companies to do this in a much easier way. And then for companies to survive, I mean, we have to be honest, we're too small a population, right? So they can't survive in Canada alone. We should want them to go across borders. We should want them to expand into the US, to Europe, to Australia. So again, developing those connections that those jurisdictions. So to me, I think it's, you know, at 5-10 years, we have our own national strategy is number one. And then two, I think we have tentacles to the global stage where, again, it makes the road a lot easier for ventures to get through. I think, and again, I think we just have to be honest that if everyone's expecting 100% success, that's not going to happen. That's not how ventures innovation happen. Yeah. But I think building that strategy so that we can make it easier, we can help more ventures go through. And to me, I think it becomes a virtuous cycle that if those ones don't succeed, there's some other horse that they can sort of hang on to take the knowledge that they did learn and move through that system. But if everyone keeps hitting obstacles, it becomes somewhat frustrating over time.
That was a great answer about vision. It's really hopeful. And I think in the last few years, we've seen amazing strides in this ecosystem. So yeah, I think
I agree.
Adding this extra layer on top is going to be really, really good on how we're developing. So again, Amal, thank you so much for joining us today and taking your time to talk about what you're working on and how you're making impact in your community. So thank you so much.
It was my pleasure, Helen. Thank you very much for having me. Enjoy talking with you today.
Okay. I want to thank everyone who joined us today and listened to our great conversation at the Making Impact series, where we talk with thought leaders around life sciences, around how they're making impact in their communities around the world. Thanks again.